Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Cochran, Judge Ross, Judge Frisch, the Honorable Gene M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. For the record, today is May 12th, 2021. We have three cases on our calendar today, two oral and one non-oral. We are hearing the oral arguments on the Zoom platform in accordance with pandemic-related court orders. The rules that apply to our Zoom oral arguments are the same that those that apply to our in-person oral arguments. Each party will have 15 minutes for their initial argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. We are recording the oral argument here today, and I'm just a reminder that no additional recordings are permitted except with the express prior permission of the Court of Appeals. I'll ask that counsel please identify yourself and the party you represent at the start of your argument, and the marshal will be keeping time in one of the Zoom grid squares, so hopefully you'll be able to see that. Counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you and good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Rahm. My name is David Bernstein and I represent the appellant to the state of Minnesota in this matter. The district court clearly erred in finding a portion of Officer Nerling's testimony not credible in concluding that the officers lacked reasonable articulable suspicion to expand the scope of the traffic stop and conduct a DWI investigation in this case. Now, generally, this court will defer to the credibility determinations of the district court, but those credibility determinations must be supported by the evidence and based upon facts in the record. And in this case, the district court's findings were outside of the record and clearly contradicted by the evidence.
Outside of what record? Exhibit 1, which you marked and entered into evidence?
Sure, Your Honor, I can address that. At the beginning of the contested hearing, the parties agreed that the scope of the issue to be litigated was expansion of the stop, and all evidence was up to the point of the administration of field sobriety tests.
So when I read pages 4 and 5 of the transcript of the suppression hearing, it doesn't appear to me that there's some limitation on what is an admissible part of Exhibit 1 versus not an admissible part. And that's not demarcated by any timestamp. And it's also, I also noted in the record that you referred to times outside of the 4-minute 40-ish mark later in the testimony. I didn't see any stipulation that somehow limited the exhibit that you entered. Isn't it incumbent upon you, if you want something other than the entire exhibit to be entered, that you enter a different exhibit?
Perhaps, Your Honor, yes. And that's why appellant made alternative arguments in this case based upon what this court determines was the record. I believe respondent will agree that the record in this case is up to the first 5 minutes and 52 seconds of Exhibit 1.
Well, why is that the record in the case? Why isn't the record, according to Rule 11001, all of the exhibits that you entered, including the entirety of Exhibit 1?
A couple of reasons, Your Honor. First, case law indicates that the evidence consists of what is played at the hearing unless otherwise
noted. What case law? What case law is that? You marked an exhibit and you had it entered.
I did, Your Honor, yes. Well, the appellant did, yes. Your Honor, at the beginning of the contested evidentiary hearing, the district court judge noted that the video is much longer than the evidence that she should consider. And so she noted that the party should note timestamps. Appellant's counsel at the hearing did note timestamp of 4 minutes and 40 seconds during the contested evidentiary hearing.
And that may be, but why isn't the rest of the video, and I mean, you know why I'm interested in the rest mm-hmm. of the video, because it shows some behavior that I'm sure that you are concerned about. It was extremely disrespectful to Mr. Toussaint, and that's putting it lightly. But I don't see any case law or rule that would somehow limit our consideration of an exhibit that you've entered into you entered into evidence without limitation.
Well, and Your Honor, the district court judge essentially placed that limitation upon the parties. Appellant's counsel asked at the evidentiary hearing about a statement that was made prior to the administration of the PBT. Respondent objected to that question as being outside the scope of the issues to be litigated, and the district court sustained that objection. And in doing so, the district court essentially limited the evidence to be considered.
Well, so I don't disagree with you that the first 5 or so minutes of that video recording is germane to the question of whether the officers had some justification for further searching Mr. Toussaint. But the rest of the video is germane to the question of the credibility of your officers. Don't you agree? When there's evidence in the remainder of the video that you're referencing, like when the officer, for some unknown reason, turns off his audio on his body camera, and apparently, according to you or according to the officer, is discussing ostensibly the allegation that Mr. Toussaint was drinking or the suspicion that he had been drinking. I don't know why you would turn off the video during that time. Perhaps the district court had similar concerns.
Well, Your Honor, with respect, this court is limited to the findings made by the district court to determine whether or not those findings were clear error. If this court believes that the entirety of Exhibit 1 is the evidence in this case, I can address that. That is why I addressed later portions of the Exhibit 1. And in that case, the district court's finding that Officer Nerley informed Mr. Toussaint that the reason for the PBT was because of Mr. Toussaint's driving conduct is completely false and contradicted by the record. The record shows in Exhibit 1 that the officers administered the horizontal gaze nystagmus test, and they noticed indicia of impairment during that test.
Yeah, but Judge Thomas didn't believe him. I mean, I watched the video. I did not see any clues of impairment. There were no indications from the officer during the administration of the HGN that they observed any clues of impairment. They didn't do any other field sobriety tests. I mean, why isn't it within the district court's discretion to say, I looked at this, I don't believe this officer or these two officers?
Your Honor, that's not what the district court said.
I think it did.
Your Honor, the district court found that Officer Nerling's perception of the smell of alcohol was not credible. That was the only portion of Officer Nerling's testimony that the district court found not credible. The district court,
Mr. Bernstein, didn't the district court also find Officer Batinich's testimony, and I apologize if I mispronounced her name, about observing bloodshot, glossy eyes, slurred speech, and slow responses to not be credible?
You are correct, Your Honor.
So what if, you know, we give great deference to the district court's credibility determinations, mm-hmm. and given that standard, what other evidence would there be to suggest impairment?
Well, Your Honor,
if we, you know, accept the district court's credibility determinations.
The officers noted on Exhibit 1 that they observed indicators consistent with impairment during the horizontal gaze nystagmus test.
But don't they have to have some reasonable suspicion to do that test?
Yes.
So what evidence prior to the test was there to give rise to a reasonable suspicion of impairment?
There were multiple factors, Your Honor. First being respondents' driving conduct at that time of day, close to bar time. In addition to that, the Officer Nerling testified that he smelled the odor of alcohol, and that finding by the district court that finding lacked credibility is clear error and contradicted by the evidence.
What evidence is it contradicted by?
Well, Your Honor, the district court made a factual finding that, and that's on page 4 of her order, paragraph 27, that FTO Nerling informed Mr. Toussaint that the reason for the PBT was because of Mr. Toussaint's driving conduct. That statement is false. Exhibit 1 shows that prior to the administration of a PBT, there was a discussion and an admission by respondent that he had consumed alcohol. There was no discussion about driving conduct prior
to. But when she stopped him originally, she said, "You were driving all over the road." So why doesn't that why isn't that statement sufficient to support this finding?
Because the district court is making a finding about what Officer Nerling said. What
she said that. She said that when she stopped him to Mr. Toussaint.
Your Honor, I think you may be referring to Officer Rachel Batnich. This finding is related to Officer David Nerling. And Officer David Nerling did not inform Mr. Toussaint that the reason for administering the PBT was because of his driving conduct. That statement was never made.
That's fair.
And so the reason why the PBT was administered was based upon the driving conduct in addition to the odor of alcohol, in addition to the indicia of impairment on the horizontal gaze nystagmus test, and in addition to respondent's admission to consuming alcohol shortly prior to driving. And so when the district court makes a finding that he did not mention smelling alcohol to Mr. Toussaint when explaining the reason for administering the PBT, there's nothing in evidence to support that finding. It is actually contradicted by the evidence. So there are multiple reasons why.
I'm still concerned that how do we even get there? I mean, what is the legal justification for even getting him out of the car and administering any tests?
And that's why, Your Honor,
in light of paragraphs 6 and 7 on page 5 of the district court's order, that these observations are not credible by either of the officers.
So, Your Honor, that's where the scope of the record is so important to this discussion, because the district court decided that Officer Nerling's perception about the odor of alcohol was in part based upon explaining the reason for the PBT. So the district court's credibility determination is based upon the reason for the PBT, at least in part. And so the district court went that far. And in determining whether or not the district court clearly erred, this court needs to consider the bases upon which the district court found that portion of Officer Nerling's testimony not credible. And that is
I don't understand that argument, because paragraph 7, which refers to Officer Nerling's observations, does not make any reference to driving conduct, or it doesn't cross-reference paragraph 27. It looks like paragraph 27 and the findings of fact relates to what happens well after Mr. Toussaint is out of the car, and paragraph 7 of the conclusions of law relates to the observations of the officers before he was taken out of the car.
And I apologize for not making my argument clear, Your Honor. I am referring to paragraph 23. Paragraph 23 contains the bases upon which the district court found Officer Nerling's testimony related about the smell of alcohol not credible. And those are the bases for finding that observation not credible.
And what's clearly erroneous about the findings in paragraph 23?
My argument is focused right now in the third portion. I can address the first two as well. But in the third portion, the district court says that Officer Nerling did not mention smelling alcohol to Mr. Toussaint when explaining the reason why he was administering a PBT. The district court did not make any findings about the fact that Officer Nerling asked respondent a third time if he had consumed alcohol. And at that point, respondent admitted to consuming alcohol shortly prior to driving. And so the district court's finding is manifestly contrary to the weight of the evidence in this case. With respect to the first two factors, Your Honor, the district-
One quick introduction.
Sure.
So just so we're clear, what's your position as to whether the officer needs reasonable suspicion before asking whether the driver has consumed alcohol?
Reasonable suspicion for asking whether or not he consumed alcohol?
Right. Is that an expansion of the scope? Is the question whether the driver has consumed alcohol in itself an expansion of the scope of the stop?
That in of itself is not an expansion, Your Honor. But the issue that was litigated in this case was expansion of the stop to conduct field sobriety testing. And one of those factors was the smell of alcohol. And so that is one contributing factor to reasonable articulable suspicion to conduct field sobriety tests, which is an expansion.
Just so we're clear, so if an officer stops a car and asks the driver whether the driver has consumed drugs or whether there are drugs in the car, we have said that that's an expansion of the scope of the stop beyond the reason for the stop. And you're saying that asking a driver, just so I just want to understand your argument, asking a driver whether the driver has consumed alcohol is not an expansion of the scope of the stop beyond the purpose of the stop for a traffic violation.
Your Honor, I don't address this in my briefing, and so I'm hesitant to answer the question definitively without looking at case law. I do think there is a distinction between consumption and driving versus possession. And based upon driving conduct, it's standard practice for officers, especially at that time of night, to ask whether or not alcohol or other impairment could have contributed to the driving conduct, which is asking for the reason for the driving conduct.
Assume for the sake of argument that the case law does not support that position. I know you're saying you haven't briefed it, but if the question overall is expansion of the scope of the stop, if you're relying upon an element of the stop that is itself an expansion of the scope, you would agree that that would be problematic in your overall argument, or not?
And Your Honor, I see that my time is up, but if I may answer that question?
You may.
Thank you. Respondent in this case was not challenging whether or not there was reasonable articulable suspicion to ask if he had consumed alcohol. And so that question was not before the district court and would not be a question for this court to decide in this case.
Okay. Any further questions from the panel at this point? All right. Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And just after you started your argument, Mr. Bernstein, I realized that I think I forgot to state the name of the case that we are hearing, so I will do that now. I know that counsel aren't familiar with the case, but for the recording, it's A20-1579, State of Minnesota versus Isaiah Carey Toussaint. Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court. Taylor Rahm, representing respondent Isaiah Carey Toussaint. As has been pointed out by the panel here, the court is here to determine if the court was clearly erroneous in their factual findings in this matter when it determined that Officer Nerling was not credible. Now, opposing counsel notes that the only thing the court did not find credible in regards to Officer Nerling's testimony was regards to the odor of the alcohol. Well, to be fair, that was the only thing we were challenging in regards to Mr. Nerling's testimony about the odor of alcohol and his credibility, because if he did not smell the odor of alcohol, in this case, the court did not find him credible, then there was no reasonable suspicion to expand the scope of the traffic stop.
The way that I understand Mr. Bernstein's argument is that paragraph 23 of the district court's order did make credibility determinations about Officer Nerling, that the observations of the odor of alcohol were not credible. But one of the bases for that determination is that he didn't mention smelling alcohol when explaining why he was administering the PBT. Is that fatal to the district court's determination, credibility determination here, if that's inaccurate?
No, Your Honor, because I don't think it's inaccurate for the fact that I do agree with Mr. Bernstein that the court, I believe, stopped watching the video at about the 5:52 mark. So when you watch that part of the video, Officer Nerling says, "I'm going to have you perform a PBT, preliminary breath test." at that point, that's right when the video or the district court, I believe, stopped watching the video because it would, at that point, outside the scope of our argument that there was an illegal expansion of the scope. But what happens then is Officer Nerling, they start doing the field sobriety tests at that point, even though he had stated they were going to do the PBT. So if you stop watching it at that point of the video, you would presume that they were about to do the PBT, Your Honor. But in fact, they moved on to the field sobriety test. So I think that's why the district court, it comes out confusing. But if you stop watching the video where the district court did, where the lining of questioning stopped at the contested hearing, that would make sense why the court noted the PBT instead of the start of the field sobriety test, because that's what it would have appeared was about to happen if you stopped watching the video at that point. But either way, as soon as the officers pulled Mr. Toussaint out of the vehicle, clearly at that point, there was an expansion of the stop. I don't think there's any argument that removing a driver from a vehicle for a minor traffic violation, at that point, you've expanded the scope of the stop. And in this case, you know, the district court was obviously in the best position to make the credibility determination of Officer Nerling. This was an in-person hearing. There was direct examination. There was cross-examination. There was redirect. There was recross-examination. There was a video. The court had everything it needed to make a determination of whether or not Officer Nerling did, in fact, smell the odor of alcohol prior to the expansion of the scope.
Mr. Rahm, you would agree that, I take it since you represent Mr. Toussaint, that the remainder of the video shows some troubling behavior.
In regards to whom, Your Honor?
Well, let me rephrase that question. Do you believe, or was it your contention that the remainder of Exhibit 1 beyond that 5-minute or 6-minute mark was relevant to assessing the credibility of these officers?
Yes, Your Honor. It absolutely could have been relevant in that sense. However, given that the argument was that the expansion of the scope, there was not reasonable suspicion to do so. The video was, I do agree with Mr. Bernstein on that at the beginning of the hearing, we did agree that once the field sobriety test started, that's kind of when we're getting outside the scope of what the argument was. But I agree with the court, there are some credibility determinations that can be made after that fact. But the point is, assuming for argument's sake that Officer Nerling smelled the odor of alcohol while Mr. Toussaint was standing outside the vehicle and doing the field sobriety test, that doesn't matter because the stop was already expanded. The scope, excuse me, of the stop was already expanded. So that evidence becomes irrelevant. The question is, did he smell alcohol prior to having Mr. Toussaint exit the vehicle? And it seems clear that the district court found the way I saw it, that there was no evidence to support that he ever smelled the odor of alcohol prior to having Mr. Toussaint exit the vehicle. And that's supported by the record. He did not mention.
What would that look like? I'm, you know, does an officer have to say, "I smell alcohol," for an officer to be credible in stating later that the officer smelled alcohol?
I mean, there's no specific case law or authority that cites that, Your Honor, but I think from a factual standpoint for a district court judge, that's absolutely a credibility determination. I mean, you can see in the video, they removed Mr. Toussaint from the vehicle without even telling him why they were removing him. I mean, that standard DWI practice, if you're going to have someone come out of the vehicle, you should provide a reason for it. They just opened the door, yanked him out of there, and immediately started searching him. Again, I don't, and then as was pointed out it's mentioned in the transcripts, I don't know what their reason was for searching Mr. Toussaint, if this truly was a DWI stop and they were expanding the scope to see if he was under the influence of alcohol, why they were patting him down. But again, I think the court's accurate in the sense that there's nothing that says a police officer has to mention that they smell odor of alcohol, but it certainly is part of that balancing test that the judge used when determining the credibility, because it moves on too. And I know in appellant's brief under the part two where the judge mentioned that he didn't tell any other officers on scene that he smelled the odor of alcohol, comes right out of the testimony that the transcript, page 64, that up until the point of starting the field sobriety test, he hadn't told any other officers that he smelled the odor of alcohol. And when you look at the video, when he tells Mr. Toussaint why he's going to be having him submit to the PBT, his reason for doing so is because of driving conduct. It would shock the conscience why an officer wouldn't just tell an individual, here's why I'm doing this preliminary breath test, your driving conduct, and I smell alcohol.
At what point does Mr. Toussaint indicate that he had been drinking alcohol?
That happens later in the video when the officer asks him again right prior to him performing the preliminary breath test. But again, it's our argument that that's outside the scope, because at the point when Mr. Toussaint was removed from the vehicle, that's the credibility determination this court has to make. It didn't right. smell alcohol at now, that time.
I guess this is the difficult part. So regardless of when it happened, your client acknowledges that he did consume alcohol. We know alcoholic beverages have an odor. So I'm trying to get a sense of the credibility determination. The judge says, I don't believe you actually smelled alcohol, even though we know, as a matter of fact, that there would be the odor of alcohol emanating from your client based upon the fact that your client had been drinking.
Well, that's true, Judge. Anytime anyone has alcohol, I assume the odor could be there, but it doesn't mean that it is there. And that's the determination the district court made. And I think in addition, the court did note that the officer who approached the driver's side vehicle did not note that she smelled the odor of alcohol. I would note she indicated at the contested hearing that she had a cold, and that was her reason for why she did not smell the alcohol. There was no mention of that, as pointed out in the transcripts that came from her police report. She was the one that was right next or closer in proximity to Mr. Toussaint, and she did not note the odor of alcohol. And again, I think you ask why Mr. Toussaint was pulled from the vehicle without any reason being told to him. There was never any mention when he was asked, have you consumed alcohol? He said no. And to be clear, I'm referring to the first time he was asked while he's still in the vehicle. Officer Nerling didn't say, well, where's that odor coming from then? I smell alcohol. Did you spill alcohol? Where's that? There was no follow-up to question him at that point prior to the expansion of the stop being expanded. There's nothing to support that he mentioned to the other officers. In fact, he testified up until that point, up until the field sobriety test, he did not mention to any other officer that he smelled the odor of alcohol. When Mr. Toussaint was again pulled from the vehicle, there was no mention of this. And I would note, the appellate cites case law in their brief. There's nothing on point where district court has found a witness lacking credibility, where the factual findings are actually supported, where this court has overturned the district court's finding in that regard, because the district court is in the best position to make that determination whether or not Mr. Nerling was credible. And again, the fact, number one, that the court finds that he did not mention to Mr. Toussaint that he smelled the odor of alcohol is supported by the record. There's no question he did not mention that to Mr. Toussaint. Point two being that he never told any other officers on scene that he smelled the odor of alcohol. That's supported by the factual record. The fact that prior to him telling Mr. Toussaint that he was going to have him submit to a PBT exam, he did not mention the fact that one of the reasons he was going to be having him do that was because of the odor of alcohol. That's supported by the record. All three factors that the district court judge used to make her determination in regards to credibility are all supported by the record. Now,
Mr. Rahm, when you say they're supported by the record, do you mean if we consider the video up until the 5:52 mark, if I have the time correct?
Yes, Your Honor, and it also comes out of transcript in regards to the actual questioning at the contested hearing, specifically, I believe at page 63 and 64, the officer Nerling acknowledges that up until that point, he had not told any officers or Mr. Toussaint that he smelled the odor of alcohol. When I say that point, I mean when he tells him that he's going to be administering the preliminary breath test. So all of that is supported by the record. And now, I don't believe the standard is for this court to place itself in the district court's shoes and say, well, maybe I would have ruled differently. It's, is it factually supported? Now, had the district court stated things that weren't true and not supported by the record, that might be a different argument. But the district court, who is in the best position to make the credibility determination, accurately stated the reasons why Officer Nerling lacked credibility in her eyes. That is supported by the record. And again, there is no case law supported by opposing counsel where the district court has found a witness lacking credibility, where there's support from the record, where this court has overturned the district court in regards to its credibility determination.
And when you say support in the record, I take it that you also mean that if the body camera footage beyond the 6-minute mark supports the district court's finding, that that would be a proper consideration for us as well, because the entirety of Exhibit 1 is part of the record.
Yes, Your Honor, it is the entirety. The whole exhibit was entered, but again, I think it was the intent that after Officer Nerling told Mr. Toussaint why he was going to be performing the PBT test, that he didn't smell alcohol. And the reason for that is it does not matter if Officer Nerling later on smelled the odor of alcohol.
That may be true, but there were references both in the hearing and also it's depicted on the video that there's some inexplicable off-the-record conversation that happened, and we don't really know what happened there.
Right.
Because the officer turned off the audio on his body camera and ostensibly talked about the consumption of alcohol, but the district court found that not to be credible.
Right. And I think, you know, as part of the credibility determination as well, too, there was times, as the court sees in the transcript, that Officer Nerling, I know the court didn't note this, but he had no issues during direct examination recalling everything. And when he was shown his body-worn camera to refresh his recollection, specifically on whether or not he had a conversation with other officers about smelling the odor of alcohol or lack thereof, that he didn't, his memory was not refreshed. So I think that goes to his credibility as well. I know that wasn't specifically noted by the district court here as one of their, you know, the judge gave three reasons, but I think that certainly, again, no issues during direct examination without having his memory refreshed, but conveniently during cross-examination, arguably tough questions, at that point, he, for whatever reason, his memory was not refreshed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Bernstein, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. If you choose to use that time, you certainly may.
Thank you. So respondents' counsel was asked about whether Mr. Toussaint's admission to consuming alcohol would corroborate or support Officer Nerling's observation of smelling alcohol. Appellant's counsel asked about that admission, and there was an objection to that testimony being outside the scope of the record, and the district court sustained that objection. That was on page 38 of the transcript. So appellant was not able to develop this portion of the record, and that's why respondent is admitting that the district court should have only considered Exhibit 1 up until timestamp 5 minutes and 52 seconds. And everything beyond that, respondents' counsel objected to, and the district court sustained as outside the scope. So,
Mr. Bernstein, if we consider the record only up until that time, stamp 552, can you explain why the record doesn't support each of the grounds that the district court found in paragraph 23? Because I reviewed the video and it appeared to me that the video would support that, but maybe I missed something.
Well, Your Honor,
along with the testimony.
I apologize. Your Honor, there's a very, very important distinction that needs to be made. respondent argued that just before 5 minutes and 52 seconds, Officer Nerling said, we're going to have you perform a PBT based on your driving conduct. That's not accurate. Officer Nerling said, we're going to have you perform some tests. There was no mention of the PBT. And field sobriety tests and a PBT are very different things and have very different analyses. This court can look at the Vondracek decision to see that there are separate and distinct analyses for the basis to request field sobriety tests and the basis to request a PBT. And a PBT specifically was not mentioned anywhere in that 5 minutes and 52 seconds. It was mentioned one time in testimony, and that was with respect to asking during the PAT search, had the PBT been done at that time? And Officer Nerling answered no. There was no testimony about the basis of the PBT. In respondent's brief to this court, his opening line in that portion of his argument related to the PBT and everything else referred to the tests. Those cannot be equated. And so there is no evidence up until 5 minutes and 52 seconds in the video of the PBT.
So further, even if we take away that particular reason why the district court found the officer not to be credible, there are other reasons why the district court found the officer not to be credible.
Certainly.
And those are supported by the record as well.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree, but it's important that that finding would be contradicted by the evidence and not in the record. So that alone would be a basis.
Well, what is erroneous about the finding that Officer Nerling did not mention his observations to Mr. Toussaint? That's accurate, right?
That is accurate, yes.
Okay. And he also did not mention smelling alcohol to any of the other five officers on the scene up until the 5 minute 52 second mark, right? That's accurate.
That one is not accurate, Your Honor.
When did he say that?
Officer Nerling didn't explicitly say out loud that he smelled alcohol, but he did make a drinking gesture to Officer Batnich.
But making a drinking gesture, and then he says, ask if he's been drinking or something to that effect. Cool. That's not the same as saying, I smell alcohol on him.
Right. And what the district court is doing is it's imposing an arbitrary requirement of officers to state out loud their observations.
Why is it a requirement? Well, why isn't it just an observation that, you know, judge looking at this tape, his representation that he smelled alcohol doesn't seem reasonable or credible to me because he didn't do these things. And I would expect that to happen.
And if you look at paragraph 23, the district court exclusively bases its credibility determination on the fact that Officer Nerling did not state out loud that he did not smell alcohol to anyone. That is the only basis for its finding.
Why is that not a reasonable basis? Even if you take away number three, I mean, number two in particular, if an officer suspects that someone's driving under the influence, wouldn't it be reasonable to expect that that officer would state that to the other officers on the scene, particularly the officer who he's instructing to take the individual out of the car, or who's instructed to remove the individual from the car?
And I see that my time is up, but if I may answer, Your Honor.
Certainly.
Officer Nerling is an experienced officer, and he testified it's not his practice to tell individuals that he smells alcohol. There's no department.
But we're not talking about individuals. We're talking about his fellow police officers.
Sure.
Which includes someone that he's training, right?
Right. And we don't know the extent of all the conversations that were had, or if Officer Nerling talked to Officer Batnich at the conclusion of this investigation to talk about what he observed. That would have been beyond the scope of the
record. But my question is, why isn't the reason that the district court gave a reasonable basis for finding that Officer Nerling's testimony was not credible? I mean, you're saying, well, something might have happened later, but the question is focused on the conversations that the judge was considering.
And Your Honor, the answer is there is no department policy. There's no statute. There's no rule. There is no requirement that the officer state his observation out loud. The officer wrote that in his police report. He testified consistently that he smelled it, but the district court is imposing a requirement that's not based upon any authority and using that as the sole criteria for finding Officer Nerling's testimony not credible. And it's not appropriate for the district court to apply that criteria as its sole basis without some authority.
Thank you for your answer to that question and to our other questions. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments here today. The matter is submitted and we will issue our opinion within the statutory timeframe.